Ja tervetuloa. Good morning and welcome to what is probably the first Windows Phone Mango developer event after the announcement. My name is Mika Okkola. I'm the director for the developer and platform evangelism here in Finland. And I have the great honor to open this event. So, only after 7 months after we first came out with Windows Phone, which offers a truly different user experience, we have this week announced the next major version, which we call Mango. And I think you can actually consider yourselves privileged, because this probably is the first time that we have an audience of this size who have an opportunity to look at that in more detail in terms of the development story. You will be about 600 people here today, which is really, really nice having a big crowd like that in here. So I won't keep you longer, and I also have a great honor to present to you Brandon Watson, who's a senior director responsible for the developer experience of Windows Phone. Brandon, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Just put that there. Wow, hello, what a great audience. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a very interesting week. Obviously, we announced the Mango consumer features at about 30 different worldwide events. I guess, what's today, Thursday, so 2 days ago? 2 days ago, I'm very confused. I just came with the ash cloud, has me very confused and disoriented as to where I am. I'm convinced that that was a plot by my wife to keep me from going out drinking with the Finnish folks tonight. She's very worried about that. She said, I hear they can drink. And I said, I've heard no such thing. So thank you very much for having me. Just by show of hands out of curiosity, how many people have actually downloaded the Windows Phone Developer Tools? Wow. So you told me nobody here would have downloaded the tools. That's awesome. That's fantastic. I love hearing that. It's funny, after the Nokia announcement, when we entered into the agreement, we keep a daily tracker on the number of downloads by country. And within the week after the downloads, the Finnish downloads spiked quite high. And within 1 week, we had something like a 1,500% increase in downloads of the tools from Finland. So many of you probably in this room, which is great. So let's get started. What I'm going to do is spend time just giving an overview of what Mango is, talking about Windows Phone from a design philosophy standpoint, showing a couple demos on the phone. And I'm really going to leave most of the deep, deep technical stuff to Jaime, who you're going to spend the day with. Very smart, much smarter than I am. He'll walk you through a lot of code and really dig into the technical details. I just want to give a flavor for kind of the direction we're going, talk about the things we think about in terms of how we want to engage with the developer audience, and where we believe the opportunities lay. For those of you who have been following Windows Phone for a while, hopefully you've seen that we've been very, very different in terms of how we're engaging with the developer community. There's a few core principles that we have on my team, and this is one of them. It's funny because I was sitting in a meeting with my president, Andy Lees, and he asked me, we were talking about spending some money, and he said, what's the return on investment? That's a standard question, I guess, from the business guys, and I thought about it, and I wrote this on the whiteboard. He didn't get it. A few of the engineers chuckled, but what I loved about what followed was a couple of the engineers said, well, your code is wrong. It shouldn't be a function. It should be a property. Shame on you. And so they call me the dumb marketing guy, I guess, but we kind of keep this as kind of one of our calls. And we also believe in being very highly available. I'm on Twitter. That's my handle. That's actually also my Skype address. That is my mobile phone number. If you actually called me right now, please don't. If you call me right now, the phone will ring. I give this out, and everyone on my team gives this out, because we want to be highly available to the developer community. We want you to always feel like there's someone within the mobile phone business at Microsoft that you can contact with your problems to help make you more successful. And that's very, very, very important to us. And so I have no problem publishing this information. In fact, we're doing office hours occasionally now on a weekly basis, where you just open up a 30-minute window. And I've gotten calls from Australia. I got a call from Singapore. I got a call from a developer in Botswana. That was interesting, because I didn't know we had anybody developing tools down there. And although the most interesting place for downloaded tools was the Vatican, apparently we've had two folks download tools from the Vatican. I want to meet those guys. So this here is a nice little build slide of the first 12,000 apps that have been in Marketplace. We actually did this little video creation for Mix, So we're reusing that. But as of sometime late the other night, we crossed 18,000 apps in the marketplace, which is a pretty astonishing number. And you know, everyone likes to talk about the number of apps in Apple and the number of apps in Android. What people seem to forget is everyone started from zero, and what does that growth path look like? We were at zero in October. Zero. And we're already 18,000. And that's in no small part due to the developer support that we've gotten from the community, the excitement around the platform, and how people feel about the opportunity. Another show of hands, who has submitted apps to the marketplace? That's actually not too bad. Obviously, there's some markets where it's a little bit harder to submit apps than others, this being one of them. And that's going to change with Mango, and we'll talk about that. But thank you to the folks in the room who have submitted apps in the marketplace. So, as I said, it's been an amazing year. It was almost 1 year ago today that I'd gotten on a plane for the first time after taking this job. And I came over to Europe and met with all of our major counterparts across Europe and France, Italy, Germany, Spain, and then spent a day in Amsterdam meeting with our Nordic countries. We all flew in and met in Amsterdam. And we had nothing. The phone had just been announced. We had the dev tools were sort of available. We didn't know how we were gonna pitch it to developers, what the opportunity was, how we were gonna talk about it. And in just one short year, it's been quite exciting. This is, you know, the first 1,000 apps that were in the marketplace. We have it on a wall back at the office. It's very exciting when you get to the first 1,000. But we've had 1.6 million tools downloads. It's quite an astonishing number to get 1.6 million of anything, much less tools downloads. We're very, very excited about that. This is actually the numbers now to date. I guess we're at 18,000 apps in the marketplace. We've had 42,000 registers, developers in the marketplace. That's 42,000 developers saying, we believe in the platform. That's 42,000 developers voting with their wallets, parting with their cash, registering in the marketplace, and saying and signaling to us, we want to be part of this community. We want to be part of this opportunity. And so obviously, they've been submitting apps. We get about 1,000 new apps every week, about 1,200 new registered developers every week. Continues to grow. It's very exciting. I continue to be amazed by the wealth of creativity that we see in the marketplace in terms of the apps that are being created, the games that are being created. And with Mango, there's just so much more. And we'll talk about some of the new stuff that's coming in Mango that should lead to more exciting apps. So, you know, obviously a big thank you. Every developer matters. We believe that very strongly, every single one. We want every single one of you to be successful. We want there to be the shortest window of time from your imagination to a customer experiencing that and being delighted by that. We want to remove as much friction from the process as possible and help make you be successful. When we first introduced Windows Phone a little over a year ago, when we told the story, we kind of went back to when we first started designing Windows Phone. This is, I guess, about close to 2.5 years ago when we started on this journey. And what we wanted to build was a different kind of phone. And what we have here, kind of, you know, iPhone and BlackBerry, and you've got the Palm. But you know, if you look at them, they're quite generic, right? I mean, iPhone obviously ushered in a very new era of what a smartphone should or should not be, could be. Obviously, they did a very good job. But the phones that have followed have been largely imitations. They haven't really innovated. We wanted to be different. We knew we couldn't show up to market with something that was just a little bit better or a little bit different. We had to be very, very different. And so that's what gave birth to Windows Phone. It's a very iconic look and feel. The live tiles on the start screen, communicating information to your customers. They're animated. They move. They change. They're always connected. It's a very glance-and-go experience. You look at your phone. You get what information you need. You can put it back in your pocket if you want. Or you can deeply engage with the apps because of the Silverlight infrastructure that allows you to build such great apps easily for the phone. But with that, there was one kind of secret weapon we had, and that was our design language, which we call Mango. Now, Jaime's going to spend an entire session talking to you about Mango, but I want to just give you a kind of high-level thoughts about what it is and where we come from with it. But basically, we wanted to enable developers to leverage the work that we put into the phone to build deep customer engagement throughout the phone experience. I came into, I was commenting to my host here, and I flew into the airport last night, and you fly around Europe, I speak Spanish and English, and with romance languages you can kind of sort out or at least parse the language and figure out directionally where you're going. I couldn't figure out any of the words in the airport, so I'm going to have to learn some Finnish or at least attempt to learn some Finnish so I can at least say hello and goodbye, but I couldn't even, listening to people, I couldn't even pick up the language. That was a bit hard for me to be in that environment, but the metro stations, airports, trains. We figured out how to communicate with other people, despite the fact that they may not understand your language, where your bags are, where you need to go, where's the bathrooms, where's the luggage, where's the cabs, where's the planes. So a fierce reduction of all the stuff that doesn't matter to iconography and relying on text to communicate information is something that we figured out over many, 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 many years in terms of how to convey information outward. And we took those to heart and wanted to put that into the phone. So we've removed much of the windowing, all the chrome in the applications, and we have a fierce reduction of anything that doesn't matter within the context of the app to communicate the experience to customers, and we want to enable our developers to be able to do the same. And so that gave birth to the Metro design language. And so you see that, show of hands, people who have actually used a Windows phone. I know it's for sale here, but wow, it's fantastic. Awesome. That's fantastic. So for those of you who have used it, you know, this should all look very, very familiar. For those of you who have not, this is the essence of Metro design, right? Very, very, very fierce reduction of things that don't matter, right? But more importantly, is how everything is connected. And I stole this from our design team because this is such a great graphic illustrating how all of the elements within the phone come together. You know, you have your start screen, and from your start screen, you can go to your People Hub. And within your People Hub, you have all of your contacts, but from there, you can jump into email, or you can jump into making a phone call. From email, you have a picture, which is pulled from your People Hub, or you can jump into, you know, addresses. All the information is tied together to make using the phone very seamless. You're not going deep into an app and then backing out of menus and then going deep into another app and backing out of menus, because that's the paradigm that's been foisted onto the users of smartphones today, is you're kind of backing in and out of apps. We believe that all the apps need to be connected, and all that information should be shared, and so it becomes a seamless experience to move through the applications and the experience of the phone. And so that is evident when you use the phone with the first-party apps, the ones that we developed, but then also allowing developers to take that canvas and utilize it to build amazing and engaging apps and games for their customers. So let's talk about Windows Phone Next, or we can now officially call it Mango, I guess, is the code name. Don't ask me where the code name Mango comes from. The rumor on the street is, well, it ended in O. That is what I was told. It ended in all of our code names, apparently, for this iteration of the phone end in O. We listened to what developers said they needed. Certainly the top three things that I've heard over and over again in the last year and a half of talking to developers about Windows Phone, those are in Mango, and we'll talk about some of those things are. But we've been listening to what developers said they wanted to make even better apps, even better games on the phone. And let's talk about what some of those things are. We have three separate areas that we wanted to focus on in terms of what we were going to deliver in Mango. First is the opportunity. The opportunity for you as developers to sell your apps. The opportunity for you as developers to participate in a growing ecosystem. The opportunity for you to get discovered, right? Search and discoverability of apps on the phone is one of the hardest problems that hasn't yet been solved. We're getting better at it and enabling other opportunities to surface your applications to customers. And we'll talk about what some of those things are today. And even more countries, right? When we launched Windows Phone, we officially were, you know, we accepted application ingestion from 30 countries, but really we were only in 16 countries where you could create apps and sell them. And so with Mango, we actually expand that, and we'll talk about the number of countries shortly. As far as capability goes, the browser is, bar none, top-notch, right? We've really focused on the best web on any mobile phone, period. It's the IE9 engine. It's the same engine that you have on the desktop, and it's a fantastic web browsing experience. Integration with the phone experience, the ability to access more information, utilize the more of the sensors on the phone, raw camera access API, network access. There's a lot more stuff that you can take advantage of on the phone. And, of course, multitasking. This seems to be one of those things that everyone says they wanted and needed, and we heard you. We agreed. The phone has always had multitasking. But what we really needed to focus on in terms of implementing multitasking was how to do it in a way that balanced battery life and user experience. It says a lot about a phone when the number one selling app is a task killer. Right? That shouldn't be the case. Right? Customers shouldn't have to manage tasks on their phone. They shouldn't have to worry about buying an app and regretting it. It's actually one of our core principles for the phone, which is ensuring that no customer ever regrets buying an application. And let's be clear, when they buy an application that they install and runs in the background and kills the battery and the phone experience goes kaput, who do they blame? They don't blame you guys. They actually blame us. And they return that phone, they tell their friends it's a crappy experience, and their friends don't buy the phone. And then there's less people buying the phone, and there's less people for you to sell apps and games to. So we really needed to focus on making sure that that experience was a good one. And when we did enable multitasking, it was done in a way that would, again, maintain battery life and user experience, but also enable the apps to continue doing things in the background for customers. And then productivity. Our dev tools is, you know, we believe they're the best in the industry. We focus a lot of energy on Visual Studio. We focus a lot of energy on making sure Blend could help create great Windows Phone apps and using Blend as a design surface. But we really put a lot of energy into Visual Studio, expanded some of the functionality, included some new features like the Profiler and some other things we'll talk about shortly, which really expand your ability to focus on the experience of building your app and not the experience of building your app, which can be bad if it's tough. Right? We want to make it very, very easy for you to build apps. So let's talk about the opportunity, right? More customers and more places. First, Nokia, right? The history of Nokia, there's probably way more knowledge in this room than I could ever talk about Nokia, but this is a huge deal for us. I was one of the people on the deal team working on this. It was many, many hours. I couldn't be more excited because it allows us to focus on what we do best, operating systems, and allows us to work with a world-class partner that builds amazing phones. I remember way back when I was first working on this, I guess December or January, I was talking to the guys at Nokia, and they told me they manufacture 1.2 million cell phones a day. That's an astonishing number. I'm actually spending a day over tomorrow in Espoo, and I was hoping to get to actually go out to one of the factories, and that may or may not happen. But just seeing that many phones getting made at one time would be pretty incredible. We're very excited about the partnership with Nokia. Obviously, phones are going to come. I think they've said, we don't want to pre-announce anything, but they've said they want to have some phones available this year in volume 2012. But this is a really, really big deal. The number of markets that they allow us to expand into with the mobile operator billing, customers are about 5 times more likely to buy an app when there's mobile operator billing. And Nokia has far more mobile operator billing agreements than we have at present. More countries in terms of where they have a footprint, where they have a presence, and just the global brand equity. So it's a fantastic opportunity for us, and we're very excited. So in the context of creating apps and selling them, let's talk about a few things that matter. One, languages. When we first launched the phone, it was English, French, Italian, German, Spanish, and that was sufficient for a reasonable population of the world, but there's actually a lot of languages spoken in the world, and so we've added support for 16 more languages, some of them of the Asian character set, which required us to make some changes and modifications to how the UI is implemented, and we're very thoughtful about that, but we didn't just want to do basic translation. It was making sure that the languages, left to right, top down, right to left languages, worked within the context of the user interface. But adding these 16 additional languages gives us much more reach in terms of addressable market, and we're actually very excited about that. But also in terms of creation and commerce, as I said, when we first launched Windows Phone, we enabled developers from 30 countries to submit applications to the marketplace. And those 30 countries gave us a pretty solid footprint in terms of developer ecosystem. But with Mango, we'll be adding 8 more countries. We're very, very excited about that. Most notably of which is China and India. It's obviously very, very big developer populations. But the sad truth was that despite the fact that we supported 30 countries for application ingestion, you really only could sell apps in 16 countries. And so that was a bit of a frustration for some developers. They wanted to be able to sell locally. I'm a very, very firm believer that just about anybody who is a developer, especially on the mobile platform, who's building an app, wants to have that moment where they pull their phone out of their pocket and they say, hey, look at this app I built. Right? They turn to their buddies and they want to share the app that they've built. Everybody wants that moment, and it's a little bit tough when there's no marketplace in your country, a little bit tough when you can't show anybody that you're actually selling your app. So we're expanding from 16 countries to 35. So it's a couple less than the number of countries where we support application ingestion. The notable exceptions here are, I believe it's China, Israel, and Luxembourg are the 3 countries where we won't have marketplace. But this significantly increases the footprint of where we have marketplace available, and that's good news for developers around the world. So another challenge that we had, or opportunity, was with the marketplace. Discoverability is a huge issue. We know that helping customers find your apps is really, really important, but also making sure that the marketplace experience is a solid and good one. I wanted to demo the marketplace on the phone. It looks like they're doing some maintenance on the server, so I'm gonna apologize while I use some screencast here to convey some of the changes we've made. But we've improved discoverability by having a marketplace hub in all markets. There's actually a search soft key access on the screen now. It's not the hard button on the phone. We've updated merchandising to expand the number of slots where we can actually promote applications. There was a presentation I did earlier in the week about how to be successful in the marketplace. And on average, when you get merchandised by our editorial staff, you can count on about a 500% increase in your sales when that happens. So obviously those merchandising slots are important, and so we expanded the number of slots that we have available within the marketplace. But when you... one too far. So by tapping on the marketplace, it will launch, and you'll see, comes up here, you've got the panorama experience. This is ESPN's app is kind of being merchandised across the entire panorama. They have the entire background image, but we also have a games section and a music section, so separate sections for the different types of content that we have within the context of the marketplace, as well as the mobile operator, as well as the handset manufacturers have the ability to have their own slots, which are the top two here in the marketplace. Games are very important on the phone. I myself have found a time waster and unfortunately have corrupted one of my colleagues. I've told her about a game called Wordament. If you haven't played it, it is Boggle, but it is massively multiplayer online Boggle. And I don't know if that oversells it. It's very exciting. No, it's just very addictive. You end up, you're competing with everybody on the internet basically at the same time, and the game turns over every 2 minutes. It's a great time waster, so if you haven't played it, I would highly encourage you. But the games were kind of interspersed with the apps. And then we have a lot of indie game developers who felt like, gosh, you know, can you do better for us? Can you separate out the games marketplace from the apps marketplace? And so we actually have. So by actually going into the games marketplace, we now have an entire games panorama as opposed to it being put together with just the apps. So that's, again, expanding the opportunity to merchandise games specifically within the marketplace. You have the background image, which is the takeover for the panorama, as well as featured applications. You have six tiles, and you have the top apps, and you can click down and go one level deeper. But the ability to have increased discoverability and promotion opportunities for games, specifically non-Xbox Live games, is a very big deal for developers looking to build on our platform. You can see here that we've got separate queues for downloads and updates to kind of separate them out if you want to see what's going on with your downloads and see what's going on with your updates, which is nice. And we also now have parental controls. This was a big deal for a lot of parents. I have three small kids, and as of right now, they're not actually playing any games that I worry about, but at some point I'll give my daughter a phone, and I'm sure on some level I'll want to make sure that she's not playing things that are inappropriate, so we will be implementing parental controls within the context of the marketplace for game access. So the customers have your phone. Great. They bought the phone. Now they need to find your app, right? How do we do or how do we enable more discoverability? So I'm actually going to jump over. I guess I'm supposed to tell the machinist back here. We get to jump over, and we'll see what happens here and see if the marketplace is back up. It may or may not be working. We'll see what happens. But we switch in. Is that what's going on? Oh, look at that. Okay, well, we'll just kind of go ahead one slide, and we'll... All right. So for those of you who've used the phone, one of the common complaints was you get too many apps in this list, and it just kind of turns into this long list, and that is, in fact, true. We've added jump lists now, so it separates out the list of applications, so you can actually jump to any position in the list based on the lettering, first letter of the apps in the, on the phone. But most importantly, we have the ability now to do search, so you just start typing in. It does quick search within your app list, and you can quickly find the apps that you have, or you can then go search in the marketplace. So for folks who are downloading apps, we have customers who have several hundred apps on their phones. That list of apps can get quite long, and so we're trying to make it easier for customers to find your applications on the phone once they've installed it, so they can use them more often. So now we're going to switch back. Was that turned for everybody the whole time? Is it? Okay, can we turn it back so when I come back to the phone, it's the... Do I have to push a button? All right, well, someone will figure that out before we come back to the phone. All right, so now we're back here. All right. Well, now it's just, I feel like it's watching me. Okay. So hunting is... I see it down here, and I'm very confused. Okay. So hunting is very hard, people hunting, right? And searching is easy. People understand that. One of the things that we've added onto the phones within the context of the marketplace, again, because of the marketplace is actually down, I can't show it, so I have to do a screencast, is when you do a search, we have the ability to show not just apps and games together, which is nice as its own pivot, all right? So as you do a search, you have the ability to move through and the different pieces of content are separated out, but we also now have related content within the search. We have related content within the search, which is nice, and then there's another feature which I'm going to talk about in a moment. But the ability now to separate out games and apps, music, podcasts. That filter is very nice. But then we have one better, which is the when you do your query, we have autocomplete, which is based on historical searches at the search servers as well as on your phone. So that's nice. It's the ability, you know, you're maybe not sure what you're looking for, and we can help you discover by doing the advanced autocomplete. But Windows Phone wants to bring your app to customers' fingers, right? It's really important for you to sell your app. You may be happy that your friends are selling their apps, but you really care mostly about yours. And so we really, really spent a lot of time thinking about novel ways we could innovate on how to bring apps to customers. And one of the things we wanted to focus on was search. We have a lot of telemetry data coming back from our test phones and customers using the phones. And search is one of the biggest used features on the phone. Turns out customers start a lot of their tasks with search. They pull out their phone, they go to search, they want to look for things. They want to look for movies. We're in a movie theater, right? What movies are playing? They want to look for a restaurant. Maybe they want to get directions. They do a lot of searching on the phone. And Bing is a very powerful asset that we have. It's a decision engine, lots of data, and helps customers make decisions based on the context of what it is they're trying to do. And so in working with the Bing team, we created what's called product cards. And these product cards will surface in the context of search for things like movies, restaurants, places, and things, products, DVDs, books, etc. And so when you do a search for one of those things and we surface a product card and you tap on that product card, it brings you to this UI. And so you have the about, and this is a movie, and you have show times. But what's really interesting is as you swipe over, you see the about and the show time and the tab up there. As you move all the way to the right, the last tab says, here it says extras, this is an old screenshot. It's going to be called App Connect. It will say apps. And this is a way for us to do two things. First, and the most obvious, is to surface apps on your phone that have registered with the system that say, I know how to deal with this product card. Right? So for a movie, in this particular instance, you have two apps on the phone, IMDb and MSN Movies, that when they were installed, they had a small section in their XML, in an XML file in the ZAP file. That registered with the system on install that said, okay, I know how to handle movie cards. So what happens here is, as a customer is doing their search, they want a linear task completion, right? They don't want to then think about, okay, I've done my search for this movie, whatever, X-Men. Now I need to go find an app and then type X-Men again. If they tap on the movie app here, it will jump straight into the app. The app can process that query string and take you deep linked into the relevant page within that app that will help you do whatever it is you're trying to do. So for IMDb, maybe you want information about the movie. Synopsis, you want to view trailers. Maybe you want movie quotes or trivia. But the MSN Movie app has the ability to buy tickets. So maybe that's what you wanted. But the ability to surface those apps at the customer's time of need when they're performing a search is very novel, innovative. You won't find it on any other platform. But we actually took it one step further. And we don't show it in the screenshot here. And we have only just announced it at the worldwide announce 2 days ago. And that's the ability to surface apps that are not even installed on the phone. Because we're communicating with Bing, and because Bing has the ability to process our entire app catalog, they know which apps can handle these product cards. And so now we can merchandise apps in a list below this, slightly faded out so it indicates it's not installed on the phone. We can surface your apps at the customer's time of need without them explicitly going to the marketplace. So if you think about what that means, it's taking the decision engine, expanding it beyond just search, and helping customers connect with you in a way that you won't find on other platforms. And so this is just one of the novel ways that we're thinking about how to improve on the search and discoverability aspect of the mobile app ecosystem to make it easier for customers to connect with you and hopefully make it easier for you to sell your apps and games to them. So we're actually very, very excited about this, and we're really looking forward to seeing how apps will take advantage of that feature. So we also really wanted to focus on the App Hub experience. App Hub is our one dashboard. It's our site where you go as a developer. And you submit your apps and get information about what's going on with your apps. We've added two new types of distribution for apps based on feedback from developers. First, beta distribution. This is the ability for you to share your app with a select list of people, I think it's up to 100, where you can send an email to customers. It's a deep link where they can go and they can call them testers. They can download your app. They can have it for up to 90 days. They can give you feedback. You can't update the beta, it has to be free, but it is an opportunity for you to submit an app and put it out there and have 100 people test it for you. We did a lot of research with developers around the world. It turns out there's certain countries, specifically the United Kingdom, where registered developers aren't submitting their apps. We couldn't figure out why. And after talking to them for a little bit, it turns out in the UK they're quite worried about getting, I believe the phrase was caned, when they put their app out there, getting low reviews. Right? They were really worried about getting low reviews out of the chute because they couldn't do beta testing. So we processed that and we figured out a way to do beta testing and distribution. Most importantly, your customers don't have to have developer unlocked phones. They can download the app straight to their phone through the marketplace functionality. And so it'll enable you to get early feedback on your application from customers who may or may not be developers, which is awesome, because we all know developers give very different types of feedback than your mom and your dad and your best friends. And so that's, you now have that ability within the context of marketplace. But then there's also folks who want to be able to do private distribution. So whereas beta is I need feedback on my application before I submit it, before it goes through certification, there are other folks who want to be able to distribute their app to a limited set of people and do so in a private way, but have that app be certified and available and charge for it. So private distribution enables you as a developer to get that app out there. There's no time limit on how long it can be available, but there is no level of there's no security access enforcement. So when you send that link out, it's a jumble of letters and numbers, a very long link. But if they happen to forward that link to somebody else, that person can then download your app. So that is, you know, that is a reality of the way this system works now. But the apps can be free or paid, which is great. And the apps can be published publicly at any time, but they are all certified and sitting in the marketplace. This is a good thing for small businesses that want to do limited distribution of an app, maybe affinity groups, baseball teams, whatever, that want to have a very small distribution group of their applications, but still utilize the marketplace infrastructure and have certified apps installed on phones. So to kind of summarize, because it's, you know, there's obviously the three different options. There's the beta program, which is a limited number of users, and the app has to be free. And there's no certification, you can't update it, but it is the access control is enforced through Windows Live IDs. Private distribution, send it to as many people as you want, and it can be paid. There's no time limit on it, you can update it. Certification, it will pass through and go through that whole process, and you're targeting, you know, private users. And then, of course, there's the public marketplace, which is what exists today. We've also worked on the App Hub workflow. This has been quite an interesting experience. Again, we started from scratch, and we had to build something from nothing, and we knew that we would have challenges along the way. We might get some things right, we might get some things wrong. Who here has, well, there was very few hands that raised their hand for submitted apps, but if you know what a W-8 form is, raise your hand. If you love W-8 forms, raise your hand. Exactly. So we're trying to make it easier for folks to submit their W-8s. We are planning on having an online version of that W-8, also an online version of the USTIN number. It turns out that if you don't have that TIN number, you're overpaying in your taxes because there's a bunch of treaties between the United States and other countries where we have different withholding rates. But if you don't have that TIN number, we don't do that. And so you're basically giving the United States government a free loan. Don't do that. I don't like giving the U.S. government a free loan, and I'm a citizen. So definitely get your TIN number, and we're trying to make it easier with the online validation. You will be able to export your data in XML format. And be able to take it with you, all your download data and everything else that's within the marketplace. So it's easier for you to drop that into, say, Excel or whatever your favorite is, homebrew solution that you might have written to analyze that data. And we'll be localizing the App Hub into Japanese, Korean, and simplified Chinese as well. So we're quite excited about that. We've also cleaned up the dashboard quite a bit. It's a much cleaner UI. We've taken a lot of the Metro design principles and wanted to focus on fierce reduction of text. And removing all the stuff that didn't matter. We have very clear notifications for any actions that you need to take. This is a great example right here on the right-hand side of the screen where you've got lots of notifications. We believe in being very clear and transparent in any information we're communicating to developers about where their application is in the certification process. We don't want there to be any opacity. We don't want you to ever be confused. We certainly don't want you ever writing blog posts saying, well, gosh, I've been in cert for 3 months, and I don't know what's going on. I'm sending emails, and no one's responding, and oh, shoot, they just denied me, and I don't know why. Right? When you get a marketplace failure, you get a nice PDF report. It explains exactly what certification rules didn't pass and things that you can do to make sure you pass the next time. So we believe in very clear and prescriptive guidance when communicating with developers about their certification process. We also will be highlighting all of your apps by downloads and royalties, which is nice, so having a centralized place to look at all that information, as well as having a place where you can go look at all of the reviews that customers are giving you in one place. Today, if you want to do that, you actually have to go sign into Zune and choose different languages, and it's kind of a mess. And so we've cleaned all that up and made it easier for you to look at the feedback you're getting on your app. As well as the, you know, we talked a little bit about the game ratings. So we'll help doing assisted game ratings using all the different ratings agencies that exist worldwide. So now I want to transition away from the opportunity and talk about the capability of the functionality of the OS and what we're enabling you to do as developers on the phone. First and foremost, we believe in having the best web experience on our phone. IE9 is a fantastic desktop browser. We're very excited about what that enables for developers on the desktop. And we've taken that engine, brought it over to the phone, and want to make sure it's the exact same engine, desktop and mobile. So when you build once for web, it looks the same on all, but it's also blazingly fast, great JavaScript performance, and hopefully hands down the best experience. So with that, I'm going to do a quick demo. So let's, I guess we're going the wrong direction there. Bring the phone back up so we could see. They did fix it. They came and fixed it. That's awesome. All right. So let's just show what the web looks like on the phone here. How's that look? Everybody see that? All right. Okay. Cool. The first thing I want to do is take a look at. We have a test drive site. We have a couple demos, and some of you may have seen this already. You know, there's a lot of multitasking we'll be talking about shortly. One of them is background audio. There's the functionality to do background audio within the phone. And we enable that not just for folks building native apps to the phone, but also through HTML5. So if we go ahead and press play here, and you won't be able to hear the audio, but maybe if I hold my cheek up. Everybody hear that? No? Maybe? It's actually playing the music, and I can go back to the home screen. Music's still playing. Again, that's the web browser audio. It's not a native app. I can even lock the screen, right? And the audio continues to play. Plus, you have the ability to pause from the lock screen, right? So we've thought through the background audio, not just for the native applications, but also for web applications running on the phone. So that's pretty cool. Let's jump back in to the demo here and I'm actually going to go back to that start page, and I'm going to show another really cool demo here, which is the speed reading demo. And this is just showing CSS transforms happening on the phone, and we show a nice little frames per second. You can't really read that, but this number right there, that little thing, FIPS per second, it's about 23. Some of our executives like to show this demo being shown on stage with some of our competitors' phones and how they don't go as well. What I'll say is, on the iPhone, they don't have a GPU, so it won't perform well. So until they have a GPU on the phone, the web can't perform that well. And on Android, they do have a GPU. It just depends on which Android you have. And how it's implemented. So it's kind of they have a fragmentation challenge there, so it performs well on some but not others. But the main point to take away here is that the browser is utilizing the graphics processing unit on the phone to deliver a great, visually stunning, visually arresting experience on the phone. It doesn't hinder the performance or the experience of using the web on the phone, and it results in a great customer experience using the web and having a beautiful web on the phone. Now, lastly, what I would like to do is show, because I got this question while I was in the UK, is, you know, how much HTML5 do we really have on the phone? And so I'm going to go to the, in the States, in Boston, Massachusetts, Boston.com is the Boston Herald, their major newspaper. And right on their homepage, and as you can see, I'm just loading Boston.com, I'm letting no tricks here. They have video where you can actually see, that right there is a little Flash logo. But if it detects HTML5, it will actually pop in HTML5, so it's not Flash running. I don't want anyone to be confused. But if I tap on the play, what it's going to do is, using the HTML5, using the video codec, it's going to launch the video browser, the video player natively, and hopefully. Sometimes when I do these, I sweat and get a little bit of gunk on my fingers, and the screen doesn't work. Huh. Well, I guess that may be my one glitch for today. It's not playing, which is always fun. What do you think? Should I hit refresh and try again? It's always risky. We'll see what happens. This is my fingers crossed right now. I assure you it works, so I'm going to take a chance. We'll see what happens. This is my one glitch. If this is the one problem I have today, then I've got, you know, much bigger problems to worry about, but it certainly worked earlier, which is always fun and exciting. But you know, the ability to have native HTML5, we have geolocation, we have the background audio, we have the audio player support, obviously, we have video player support. We'll see. Maybe we have video. Please work. Stop being mean to me. It doesn't want to work. Maybe if I step away from it, it will work. No? Okay. Well, it works. I apologize. It's not working. But it does work, and I'll leave it there and I'll see what happens. So as far as HTML5 goes, great experience on the phone. Obviously, we're very committed to HTML5 on the desktop, as well as supporting it in the browser. for the phone. So now we're going to swap back over to here and not here. It doesn't want to work. I apologize. Turn that off. Okay, so now we're going to talk about phone integration. And then the types of things that you can do within the phone. How many folks have built XNA games? Anybody ever built an XNA game? Awesome. How many of you really wanted to put a button on that XNA surface and you had to create a graphic and it's kind of a pain, right? It sucks, not fun. If you've ever done any game developing, if you want to do kind of buttons, leaderboards, instruction screens, anything like that, you've got to create art assets, and it's actually a big hassle to create those things, especially if you want to localize your content. And so we thought we could do better. Right? We have the XNA framework. It's a fantastic framework for building games. It's what we use for the indie developers on Xbox. So you can actually share your code across the multiple platforms, which is nice. But we, you know, when we first introduced Windows Phone, people said, hey, why is it I have to choose between Silverlight and XNA for the type of application I have? And with Mango, you no longer have to make that choice. We actually have the frameworks put together. Within XNA, you can actually put Silverlight objects on your surface, or you can actually put XNA brushes on top of your Silverlight surface. And now we're going to go back here, sorry, and I'm going to show you what that would look like in the form of a demo, which is pretty cool. Here we've got this is just a 3D model rendered in XNA, but what you may not notice are these buttons right here on the screen, so I can just tap that button, and again, it's, you know, so I have the ability now to spin this, but that's enabled because I have the ability to utilize the controls and take advantage of the Silverlight programming model for what these buttons will do. I can go ahead and edit. You know, I may want to change the animation. I can make the wheels rotate or not. Right. So the XNA game or XNA app is actually responding to the Silverlight controls. So if you think about the things that that may enable you to do, for example, these buttons, I don't know how to say animation in Finnish. Perhaps someone will shout it out. But if you wanted to release this application for Finnish customers, you'd have to go in with XNA without the Silverlight ability and have different buttons, and you'd have to load the different buttons based on language. Now you can actually just do localization strings and put those buttons right on your surface. And so bringing these two frameworks together will enable, hopefully, a bunch of very rich types of games and hopefully a lot of really other cool things, especially when you think about taking the raw camera access, which we'll talk about in a moment, the ability to take the raw camera access and also putting controls on top of that. So we're very, very excited about the XNA and the Silverlight coming together on the phone. So now we're back here. We heard over and over again from customers, we want more sensor data. We want access to sensors. In the first version of the phone, we had the accelerometer, which we had. We actually have a compass in all the phones. We just don't have an API for getting to that compass. So we fixed that in Mango. You actually now have the ability to get a managed API access to the compass. And we've also added a gyro, the ability to detect yaw and spin and positional space. And so what that means is you can start building a bunch of really interesting applications, but when coupled with the raw camera API, you can start thinking about building augmented reality applications. But we spent a lot of time with our research and development team because it turns out that math, and this is, I never thought I would actually be so old as to say math is hard. You know, once I was a student and took, you know, multivariate differential calculus equations, now algebra seems difficult. I'm not sure why, but that's the case. When you want to do things like you know, working with a magnetometer and compasses and things of that nature, it turns out with the sensors, it's actually quite difficult math. And I was asking the R&D guys to walk me through, okay, well, what, you know, what's so special here? And I said, well, imagine if you've got a compass, depending on where you are positionally, you actually have to correct for magnetic north and true north. I said, okay, that seems hard. He goes, no, it's very hard. And he started writing the math, and I said, okay, stop, I believe you. But the math is very hard. And so with our motion sensor APIs, we've taken a lot of research and development effort. We've taken that the set of libraries from our R&D guys, and we put it in the phone, made it available to you. So it's very easy for you to now access the sensor data within the phone. You don't have to worry about magnetic compass drift and sensor resets and a bunch of stuff that you have to do if you're using, say, other platforms or if we didn't have this library to make it easier for you to access that data and do a lot of the 3D positional stuff. We make it, you know, hopefully a little bit easier for you. And then we're actually quite excited about the motion sensor APIs that we've released with Mango. You know, earlier I mentioned the top three things that we heard developers say they wanted from the next version of the OS. Number one, hands down, sockets. Hands down, number one request. A close second, database access, or local database. And then third was the raw camera access. They wanted the ability to do that. But those were hands down the top three. There was a long tail of features beyond that. But those three, hands down, the most requested features, and we're glad to be able to deliver those on the phone. We've also added the ability to do more pickers and choosers. So this is, the ability to access the local calendar information, the local contacts database. It's read-only, but at least you have access to it, so you can start thinking about the Skype app. Apparently, I think we might have just bought Skype. I don't know. I'm not allowed to talk about it. So with Skype, you can think about how that app will actually look on Windows Phone now. They have the ability to access the contacts database and make those phone calls. They can use sockets to get off the phone, accept incoming calls. It's very exciting. We've added a couple other choosers. One is a directions chooser. So if you want to add directions to whatever inside of your app, let's say you've got a local restaurant review app, right, and people want to be able to get from wherever they are to that restaurant. Before, it would be very hard. You had to implement a map control and inputs and whatnot. And now it's actually one function call. You give it an origin and a destination lat long code, and we just launch the page, and it gives directions, and it takes advantage of all the infrastructure on the phone, and you actually don't have to write that much. But we also added multitasking. There's a couple of things to think about with multitasking, and the most important is, what do you need it for? What is the app doing? First and foremost, it's the app should be responsive. For folks who have used Windows Phone, maybe you've played a couple games and you've accidentally hit the capacitive touch search button and you've been rudely ejected out of whatever game you were playing, and then you hit the back button to go back and you get the little resume, 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 and you're waiting and staring at the phone, resume, resume, and that could take upwards of 20 seconds sometimes, right, because the app is basically reloading. We wanted to do better and make sure that when apps go deactivated, they're actually not going out of memory, they're not disappearing, they go into a stasis mode, and you can quickly get back to them. So we have what's called fast app resume, and you'll get to that by just pushing and holding the back arrow button, and you can see the back stack of the apps running on the system. So that's nice. But fast app resume normally solves a problem of how do I get back to my app? It doesn't solve the problem of what can my app do when it's not, when it's not in the foreground? What's it allowed to do? And we thought really hard about this and the cases in which a customer would want an app to be able to do something. And what we've come up with is we actually think it's quite novel and innovative. It's called background tasks, and they're background scheduled tasks. And what this enables you as a developer to do is have your app run on a periodic basis in the background, and you get about 15 seconds, and this we're still, as we lock down the OS, we're still figuring out how periodic right now it's 30 minutes and how often, about 15 seconds of CPU time. Your app can wake up, it can go do some stuff, and then shut itself off. Because with now sockets, we know if you're on Wi-Fi or if you're on 3G or whatever your cellular network is, you have access to that information. Your app can make decisions about how much data it's going to pull down. If the phone is plugged in and on Wi-Fi, it's in a different state, so it can actually it can wake up and pull down a bunch of stuff, and so it's not abusing the cellular network. It's not going to run up a bunch of data charges. So we wanted to be smart about enabling apps to continue to work in the background, and this is the important thing, without customers making the explicit decision to run that app in the background. For example, if I want to get reminded about something, the app, I shouldn't have to make the decision to run the app, and if I reboot my phone to remember, oh, I got to go run this app, and so it's running in the background, so that I get reminded at some point in the future. Right? Apps can set reminders, they can wake up, they can do all bunch of things, but a customer doesn't have to make the explicit decision to run the app in the background. So the multitasking itself, we wanted to give this to developers and say, okay, think differently about how to build your apps when you think about background, right? Because we have now live tiles, we'll call it version 2, right? Live tiles in the first iteration of Windows Phone for developers it wasn't as good as what we could do as first-party apps. You couldn't really put a lot of stuff on the tile. You got a little badge. It was not a great experience for developers. And we heard that developers wanted to build these really great apps using live tiles, but they were somewhat limited in the functionality that we made available. And so with the updated live tiles that we've implemented in Mango, you now have the ability to do double-sided tiles. You can put graphics on the tiles, full graphic support. You can put text on the tiles, just like we can. You can do multiple pinning of that tile to the start screen. So what that enables you to do with the deep linking is to, say, have one tile on the front which goes to the front page of the app, but another tile which goes deeply into, movie reviews or take your pick, whatever you want that customer, and I'll show a demo to bring this all together. But these updated live tiles enables you to build more engrossing experiences, engage with your customers in a better way. The background tasks are very battery-friendly. They don't beat up the battery. We don't want to have a bad customer experience where the battery gets drained over time. So the apps can run in the background, but do so in a very battery-friendly way. And, of course, have the background agents that continue to work, have the app working for you in the background without the customer, again, making that explicit decision. And so when we've pushed that all together, we've got this programming model we're calling Live Agents. And I know Jaime is going to spend some time on this later today, really walk you through what that looks like end-to-end. But we think it's a really exciting way to think about how to engage with your customers and build, in a simplified programming model, apps that continue to engage with your customers over time. And so what I'm going to do is, So what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch back over here and walk you through how live agents would come to pass in an application. So the app I have here, this is our standard Microsoft brand, Contoso, when we don't have the rights from a big brand. And this is a shopping app, right? So for example, I've got some shopping app. I want to do some shopping. You can imagine Amazon or whatever your local retailer is. But this is Contoso, where I buy lots of things, electronics, and they're having a big weekend sale. You see they take advantage of a nice panorama UI within the context of Windows Phone, so it looks really great. But let me just tap here and go to, of course, it's not working. There we go. Here's product details page. Buy an Xbox. I've got the information about the Xbox. I can use the pivot control and say, hey, here's some other things. So as a retailer, they're excited about being able to kind of have a rich user experience. But what's really exciting here is I can pin this to the home screen, right? So I have the Contoso app, right, where you can see right here. That's to take me to the front page. But this here now is I've pinned that specific product to the home page. So now if I click on it, it'll take me deeply back in the app. This here, it's hard-coded to where I am in Bellevue. But as you see, as it flips over, what it's saying is, hey, you know what? It woke up, the app, right? Background running in the background. It wakes up. It says, okay, where am I? The phone. Oh, I know where you are. Where's the nearest store? Okay, well, and now it's telling me 3 miles away, there's a store. Why don't you go get the Xbox? You've earned it. You've worked hard. Why don't you go get it? Well, normally, if you tapped on that, it would take you to the front page of the app, and you'd have to go looking for that product again. But because I was able to pin this on the start screen, and we have the deep linking from a customer engagement model, I didn't have to do much. I just tapped on it. It takes me right into the application. But I really want to know, do they have it? So I'm going to tap on in-store availability. And now this is what we were talking about before with the pickers and choosers. So we have the ability now to do nice, rich maps using soon Ovi Maps through our partnership with through Nokia. But what I'm going to do is tap on the Bellevue score. And with one click, one line of code, literally, I get directions to, this is from my office, to the nearest store. And it will give me directions on how to get to that store to go buy this Xbox, right? So again, think about what happened here. I had the app running on my desk, on my start screen. I was able to go in. I saw the product I wanted. I was able to pin that product to my start screen. So now I didn't have to tap on the app and kind of go looking for that product again. Maybe it was just kind of an aspirational thing. I wanted to pin it to my home screen. The app woke up. It determined where it was by using the location API. It was able to change that live tile and say, hey, you're near a store. Why don't you tap on it? Oh, well, that's cool. Now the phone knows where I am. It knows I'm not at a store. I can get directions. It's very easy. So you can build very rich, engaging interactions with your customers using the programming model, and it brings it all home. It kind of, you know, just get those juices churning inside your brain. Start thinking about how you can take advantage of this to build really amazing experiences for customers and start taking advantage of some of these new features in Mango. So that's Live Agents. So lastly, I want to talk about developer tools, and this is where it's a rare treat for me to get to write code in front of an audience. It's always fun, but I'm going to keep it quite simple because I know Jaime is going to walk you through a whole day of code. But what I wanted to show you was just one of the things that we added from a productivity standpoint to make the developer tools a lot easier to use. And so with that, I'm going to jump over to Visual Studio and get rid of that. It's always dangerous when you have your email running on your computer. You never know what's going to show up in terms of alerts. And so what I'm going to show you is just a basic file new project. It's just a couple lines of code, very, very small. And so I'm definitely not going to impress you with my coding skills, which, by the way, they never would. But I, you know, code for fun. And so it's really cool to see some of the stuff we've added in terms of the dev tools to make your jobs a little bit easier. So let me just go in and do a file new project. And so we're going to just do a basic phone app as soon as the start screen comes up here. Phone application. We'll call it Finland. All right. And so what I'm going to do here is, one, show you the beta tools available today. They actually went up on the website on Tuesday afternoon. They are available for you to get today. The beta tools, or rather, let me phrase this correctly, the Windows Phone developer tools that are available in beta form are beta quality. You can build Windows 7, Phone 7 apps that you can ship in Marketplace with the beta tools. It will not be beta apps that you build. If you want to start playing with the Mango features, use these tools. You can install it over on top of the tools you already have. And when you create a file new, you have the choice of which OS you're targeting. Think of this as which version of .NET you're targeting. Right? So I'm going to choose 7.1. Don't read into the version numbers. It turns out grepping is not the easiest thing to do when you want to change between 7.1 and 7.5 or whatever version number we had to let me choose. So we just left it in here, and it's not. It's just to connote that it's not 7.0. It's the Mango stuff. So file new, and it's going to bring up what you'd expect. It's the standard design service, in theory. This machine, it's the gerbils are running a little bit slowly inside the machine today. I don't know what's going on. They're not as fast as they used to be. So it's going to bring up the just the standard Windows UI interface, and I'm going to zoom out just a little bit. There we go. And I'm going to drop a image onto the design surface. Okay. And what I'm going to do is go ahead and just change that to an image that I've got here on my computer of our lovely phone. Okay. And so what I want to show you is I'm going to modify some XAML here. And what this is going to be is as I use the phone, turn it around, the image is going to flip around as you turn the phone. But I'm going to show you why the tools make this a lot easier for you to do. So let me go ahead and change that. Okay. So first thing I need to do is add an image projection. So I'm going to add an image projection, which then allows me to do a plane projection. And that plane projection is going to allow me to, again, rotate that image. So give it a name, proj, we'll call it. Okay. Perfect. So we got your plane projection, and I'm going to add a reference to our sensors, which is Microsoft device.sensors. So it's very easy. Just go ahead and add that reference. And now I'm just going to jump in to the code behind. Okay. So the first thing I want to do is obviously add the using statement. Microsoft.devices.sensors. All right. And the first thing you want to do is just create a new accelerometer. So we'll call it ACC. New. All right. And then once we've done that, I want to add a delegate. Okay. And we actually have to start that accelerometer, otherwise nothing interesting happens. So, and now to avoid having me write a nice fun begin invoke statement, I actually did this a little bit earlier, so I can just drop on the page here. Okay. So what this does is just gonna take the readings and change the image. That's fun. And we just go ahead and hit F5. And so now what this is going to do is if I plugged it into the phone, it would deploy to the phone. But you can see up here I've chosen to deploy to the emulator, which is what it's doing here. But if you've built apps before for Windows Phone and you wanted to take advantage of the sensors, right, the accelerometer, you actually had to deploy to a phone because there was no way to input data into the emulator to simulate what the phone was doing. So it was kind of a pain. It wasn't really fun. So we thought hard about how we would implement that. And we've actually added the ability now to do accelerometer data through the dev tools. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to change what the phone is looking like, call it portrait flat. So now it's simulating the phone is laying flat. You can see the image is pointing up. And what I'm going to do is have a little bit of fun, just grab this dot and go ahead and simulate moving of the phone. Right? And you can see the image is now responding to those move events. Right? So that's a really interesting way for you now to be able to build your apps and test within the context of the emulator and simulate all kinds of movements. But even more interesting, we have a pre-canned shake, so that kind of just shakes the phone, so if you wanted to have that, so that's pretty nice. You can actually record your own XML data, drop it into a folder location, and save that and have different pre-canned motions that you want to, yeah, of course, that you want to then simulate. So if you think about simulating an app and you have a specific set of gestures that you know is going to cause a crash or any number of things, you can now record that, have it available for you, and then be able to do everything that you want within the context of the emulator. So Jaime's going to walk you through a bunch of other stuff that we do inside of the dev tools, but as far as productivity goes, this is a huge time saver in terms of building your apps up, and then eventually, obviously, before you submit to the marketplace, you want to test on a real device, but hopefully this will save a lot of time and frustration in terms of building applications that take advantage of our accelerometers and other sensors. Okay, so we've talked about opportunity. We've talked about capability, right? These are the two kind of most important pillars from the dev platform standpoint. Lots of new stuff in Mango. Lots and lots of new stuff. HTML5, we got more languages, lots of new countries, the fast app resume, the gyro, the motion sensor APIs, deep linking into the apps, multiple pinning of the live tiles, dual-sided live tiles, the motion sensor, the Silverlight plus XNA, you have the new pickers, you have the new choosers, multitasking, fast app resume. There's so much stuff. I believe when we did a count, depending on what day of the week it is and which number system you're using, it's about 1,500 new APIs, and we feel very excited about that. Hopefully, I've shown you just a little bit to get you excited about what we got here. People excited? Yeah? Interested? I heard an oh yeah, that's it. There you go. So we're obviously really excited about what this enables. The creativity that we see from developers continues to astound me. It just reminds me how old I really am. It's bad enough the gray is starting to pop through in the beard, but I sat down with some developers in London, a couple of 20-something-year-olds, you know, looked like they were 10. I was like, they're holding beers. I'm like, are you guys even old enough to be out this late? It just makes me feel really old, of course. I was once young and not anymore. But it was just amazing to hear how they were thinking about things they wanted to do, the types of applications, and how they were going to utilize location data. It was so inspiring for me to be able to spend that time that it gets me more and more excited, and it makes me realize that I probably, you know, despite what some of my colleagues will say, I have the best job in the company. It's quite exciting to be able to work on this and be able to shape the future of our mobile strategy, engage with developers on a daily basis, and really managing our application platform, our dev tools, and making sure that we have the best marketplace with the best developers and the best tools. So I'm done. I know we're going to do Q&A. So thank you very much for listening, letting me ramble on for about 60 minutes. But then we're going to open the floor for you guys for any questions you have. And no questions should go unasked. The only dumb question is the one that doesn't get asked. So thank you very much. I think there's microphones coming from the back of the audience. And I'm going to wander around.
Thank you. Thank you, Brandon. Any questions for you?
Wow, this is going to be, you know what, you might just want to stand up and shout if you're going to ask the question here from the middle, because it'll take forever to get that microphone down.
Yeah, so, can the emulator also play back GPS locations?
So the question was, can the emulator actually replay back GPS locations? And I am sad to say that you will not have this to complain about. Yes, it does in fact have the ability to play back GPS locations, and you can actually simulate dropping pins and routes and the whole bunch. So yes, Jaime, was he? Are you going to show this later where you do this?
I can't.
Okay, well, so it's questions. But yes, it works. It's actually pretty cool. Other questions?
There's one over there.
Where are you pointing?
I'm pointing there. White shirt.
That guy. It is done automatically by the phone. Sorry. The question was, the browser, IE9 on the phone, utilizes the GPU to speed up the experience and make for a better customer experience. And the question was, can you as a developer make the determination as to when that happens? And the answer is no. The system does it for you. One of the things we found out, and there's another feature that we have in the dev tools, which is a profiler of apps. And the UI thread is precious. Whenever possible, we'd like to remove that as a decision factor for you and kind of handle when things go on the UI thread and not. Because pushing stuff off to the GPU is obviously a much better thing.
One question to my left. Someone had a microphone there,
yep.
I think. And
there's a guy with a microphone behind
you.
Yep.
What about existing Windows Phone 7 handsets? Is there going to be upgrade to Mango available, or is it dependent on the manufacturer?
Great question. So I want to say this very clear so everybody hears my voice when I say this. Mango will be available for every Windows Phone 7 handset if you purchase today or have purchased already when it is released free of charge.
Okay, there was a next question here in the middle.
Does the browser support Silverlight?
So the question is, does the browser support Silverlight? So at this time, we do not support plugins of Silverlight or Flash in IE9 in Mango in the browser. Silverlight is our programming model for the phone. Sadly, we do not support the plugin in the browser at this time.
One question over here.
What are the new stuff for security and enterprise management?
Can you repeat the question?
Here's my do you have some new stuff for the enterprise management and the security issues?
So management of the devices and the security of the devices. We did announce some things, I think, a week or two ago, whenever Tech Ed was. I don't want to get it wrong and quote the wrong thing, so I'm going to defer to, do we have, Wilfred, do you, it's not a great story, it's a, call it a story, but we made some announcements 2 weeks ago. I don't want to get it wrong because it's a different team and I'll get the messaging wrong, but you can go look at our Tech Ed announcements from about 2 weeks ago where we announced a bunch of stuff around business features for the phone, but it's not the same. We're not quite where we were with Mobile 6X, and that has more to do with some of the philosophies around focusing on the consumer experience of the phone first and how consumers are buying phones today versus kind of phones of old. Once upon a time, you would take a job at a company and your job would hand you a phone and you'd be excited that you got a free phone at work. Nowadays, people bring their phone to work and they tell the IT guy, make this work or I'm going to be angry, right? And so we are optimizing for customers are buying phones for themselves and taking them to work. And so we're making sure we have all the features they need to buy the phone first so that they will bring them into work. It was a trade-off we had to make. Huh? It's a trade-off we had to make. I'm sorry.
More questions over there?
So let me repeat the question so that I understand it. Are you asking, as you go forward from what's available today commercially to Mango, what breaks or what should you not focus on, what should you not learn? Is that the question? Everything comes forward. There's full forward compatibility. So learn the programming model. If you don't know Silverlight as a programming model or XNA, if you're going to build games, learn that. C-sharp, obviously, is a requirement. But nothing necessarily breaks. So anything you learn on 7.0 will massively help you as you think about Mango. There's no real breaking changes between the two. That's a factually true statement, right? Yeah. Jaime will get into the real deep bits and bytes. Jaime will have maybe one or two things. But broadly, anything you know about 7.0 carries forward to 7.5.
Any more questions?
There's a question over here.
Hi. Thanks for the great presentation. Yeah, very
thank you.
What about support for NFC?
That's my answer. It's a question. What about support for NFC? We don't have it. How to put this? So, sockets and database and raw camera access was one of the number one feature requests we had for Mango. Near field communications is one of the number one requests we have for post Mango. We hear it a lot from customers. We don't have a plan in place as of right now that we can discuss publicly, but it is certainly something we hear a lot from developers as well as our hardware partners. But there's nothing to announce publicly at this time as to what our plans are, what we're doing. We don't support it in Mango, though.
I had a question. When should we expect integration with existing
OVMAPs? Yeah, so I don't know that when can we expect integration with existing services, OVMAPs, OV Store, et cetera. I would imagine when the first Nokia phone ships, that's when you can expect it. I don't know that they've said publicly any specific dates. I know that they've said they want a phone by the end of the year, but certainly in volume by 2012. But that's, you know, when the first phone ships, you can expect it to have the OV services available. Other questions?
Yeah.
So when you say sales or freedom of sales delivery of channels, do you mean can you sell apps outside of the marketplace? Okay. So no. You won't be able to sell apps outside of the marketplace. We believe for customer experience that having a certified app marketplace is actually very, very important. If customers, I mean, certainly for a homebrew community, being able to, you know, kind of share apps amongst themselves, we're looking at how to do that, and we've done some work with the Chevron team to figure out what that might look like. But for a consumer experience on the phone, having a centralized marketplace actually matters quite a bit. It gives a lot of confidence to customers when they're buying applications. It allows us to catch things like, you know, look, there are true stories of apps that are running on phones that are sending your entire contacts database to some other country. That is a true story on certain phones, and we don't want those sorts of things to happen in the apps that exist on our phone. We want a great customer experience with no regret, no post-purchase regret. So for the time being, it's the Windows Phone marketplace for purchasing apps. The question was, when can developers try Mango on real devices? So that's a somewhat nuanced question. If you are a developer who receives a developer handset from Microsoft, from some point in the future going forward, it will come with Mango on it. If you are a developer with a retail device and you want to get Mango on your phone before it is available commercially, there is nothing we've announced at this time. It is, as the guy responsible for the developer community, the developer ecosystem, the dev tools, AppPlat, it is my strong preference to make sure that developers have it early. We haven't announced anything, but we believe very strongly in delighting developers. We're working very hard to try and figure out how to make that happen. We haven't announced anything, but it's certainly not an unreasonable request. But when we have it's in the next couple of weeks or so, when we have a certain specific build milestone we get to, and we have our test devices coming in. Last year, for those of you who are familiar with kind of how this has evolved over time, last year we had these, they were ASUS E600 phones that were our developer devices, and we had developer seeding, and we sent them out to developers all over the world. We have another pile of phones coming in. They're called HTC Mazas, and they're the mule devices, test devices. Those will be loaded up. They have the gyro, and they'll have Mango on them, and we'll have those later in the summer to send developers that we're engaging with on a worldwide basis. But we don't have a date yet for when those will be available because we're waiting on the phones to get to us. First to market with Mango? Well, so first to market, we're going to launch with multiple partners, right? We announced the new partners, Acer and ZTE and Fujitsu. They'll be building devices, as well as our existing partners in HTC and Samsung, and of course Nokia. Mango will become available. Who is available on launch day? I'm not going to announce our partners' schedules. I'll let them do that for them. But we will have great devices in market when Mango comes available later in the fall.
There's a question over there.
What about custom shaders in XNA?
that's the number one request on the XNA, and sadly we didn't get there. The custom shaders on XNA is something that we hear a lot. It's a challenge with the programming model and the way things are implemented. The other thing we hear a lot on XNA is native code. So if anyone's going to ask a question about native code, I'll answer that now. We're looking very hard at how to enable that, you know, specifically like the Unity framework is something that a lot of game developers use. It's not enabled right now. It is something we've heard a lot from developers, and we know it's something we're working really hard to get to, but it's not available in Mango. Sorry.
Yeah, a question about the ruggedized devices, which are now running Windows Mobile 6.x. So what is the roadmap for them?
I don't, since I'm on developer only, I don't work directly with the handset guys. I don't know what plans are for ruggedized devices running Windows 7, Phone 7, excuse me. There may be some. I don't know, and I would look to other folks in the room, maybe over here, if they know of anything. I don't know of anything, and it's out of my purview. But it doesn't mean they're not coming. I saw a question, yeah. Boo. Boo. So the question was, what are the restrictions we place on developers? That's actually quite a broad question. I don't know how to answer it in a succinct way. We do have a very specific set of marketplace guidelines that we make available, and you can go to http://create.msdn.com. That's where the App Hub is, and download our marketplace policy specification document, which lays out what you can and can't do. But that's a deep, like, let's spend 30 minutes going through that kind of conversation. So using a third-party library inside of your application, you could use whatever you want. We encourage develop. We want the ecosystem to grow. We have a deal with Preemptive. It's a great example. Preemptive Solutions, where if you want in-app analytics, go get it from Preemptive. Add their library to your code. Go for it. We want developers building apps for the phone. We also want developers building libraries for developers who build apps for the phone. To make it easier for you guys to do stuff. So Preemptive is a great example of a company that we've been working very closely with to enable a third-party library for in-app analytics. But we don't really have any restrictions on things you can use from external. I mean, yeah, we don't, no, we want people to do that. Yes, so mobile operator billing, when I was talking earlier about MO billing, not only do we support it, we massively expand it with our relationship with Nokia. And you know, what we found is a customer is about 5 times more likely to buy applications when mobile operator billing is available. And so we're really excited about what that means for our developer community going forward with Nokia.
Okay, one more question over here, then we'll just wrap up.
Right, so the question is basically native code, which I answered there. So we do not support the building of applications in C or C++. Yep. Yep. It's why? So I am not even going to try to answer that question from the engineering standpoint. What I can say is we had a certain timeline to get things done. C# is the language that we've kind of been using for our developer frameworks. Visual Studio works great. I mean, obviously, we support C and C++ in Visual Studio, but C# is really a very highly productive. It depends on the code you're writing. So clearly, we've heard from developers that they would like support for C++. We've heard it. We don't support it today. You can do quite a lot with C#, but we'll be. So Xbox is a big box with a lot of hardware, and we're a little itty-bitty box. I don't disagree with you. We don't have it. We don't have it. Huh. Oh, it's not sad. It's horrible, but, you know, I'm sorry. I'll buy you a beer if you want. Maybe we can mumble into the beers for a little while. We can talk about you. I wake up at night screaming, oh, native code. Oh, no, okay. We hear you, and we want to support it over time. It's just, you know, when we have timelines to hit and people are saying, move faster, we're not updating the OS fast enough, when we don't make our next date, I'm going to say, because this guy, when we were in Finland, he said, you have to add native code somewhere. I said, oh, sorry, Mango's going to slip. We need to add native code. It's your fault. So I hope you feel good.
Okay, I think it's time to wrap up the keynote session. Thank you very much, Brano. It was great having you here. Let's give Brano a big hand.